Hi, welcome to the CBM podcast. This episode, we've got Sam interviewing Roger and Abby Varley about their work in Jamaica and in Russia. It's really interesting, so I'll let them take it away.
So yeah, I have with me here Roger and Abby Varley from Hall Green. Yeah. So this is, welcome to the CBM podcast.
Thank you.
So just tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the CBM.
You can go first.
Okay. My route into missionary work, if that's what you want to call it, was not through the CBM initially. So I came as a student to Birmingham, did my degree, and I just felt that I was very well blessed. God had looked after me in many, many different ways. So when I graduated, I decided that I would give something back, and I thought I want to go and do some missionary work of some sort. So I applied to the Truth Corps, which is the America Truth Corps, which is missionary work in South America. And they were full that year, so I was looking for other alternatives. And as you know, God opens up doors for you, and there's a sister at Hall Green who said, well, my sister's over in Jamaica doing work in a new ecclesia there. Have you ever thought about going over there and helping her out? So I booked a ticket for 3 months, got on the plane, and then that ended up with me doing 3 years missionary work in Jamaica on and off. So that's how I sort of got in, but it wasn't officially CBM work. But then since then I've been to Russia, Czech Republic, Belarus, which have been associated with, and Zambia as well, with CBM.
Very nice. Abby?
Probably did mainly campaigns in the UK. I know this isn't a CALS podcast, but a little plug.
We'll allow them, we'll have a little plug. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if people do that now as groups of young people, but when I was growing up, we used to get four or five of us in a car and go on a UK campaign. And I think when you do that, you meet lots of people who are interested in preaching, and there's lots of times in life when going abroad is more difficult, and so this that's kind of another thing. Kind of met my husband on one of those as well, so
very nice.
Little plug for the romantic element of that. Yeah,
campaigns do serve a purpose, a bit like Swanwick.
Oh yeah, very good.
Anyway, in terms of going to CBM work, I went to the Gambia with Brother Mike Green at the end of my first year of university, and he might correct me, but I'm pretty sure this is right. He had kind of a policy of trying to take some young people on all of his trips. So he went out to the Gambia, I think, twice a year. And on at least one of those, he would take maybe two or four young people with him. And the reason the campaigns were kind of part of that is because to go on that, you had to show that you had had some interest in preaching rather than maybe just in foreign travel. You know, because he was kind of going out a bit on a limb in having lots of young people then join him. But it was amazing as an experience. And then I guess I got dragged over to Jamaica with Rog. You went to some other places in the Caribbean, didn't you? I only got to go to Jamaica. So
yeah.
I still feel there's a bit of an unfinished business there.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't all hard work, I must admit, but we did go to lots of other islands like Barbados and Antigua, Trinidad, Tobago, but it was all with a preaching
to start with, at least.
Yes, yeah, it was all for preaching work, and we met some remarkable, wonderful brothers and sisters in ecclesias over there, so it's all worth it.
So what is Jamaica like when you were there? What has it changed now?
So I first went in 1996, and most of it was sort of it was out in what they class as the country. There's sort of only one town in Jamaica, which is probably Kingston. You've got Montego Bay, but everything else is classed as country in Jamaica. And it was lovely, absolutely lovely, because it hadn't then been sort of westernized a lot. So in Kingston and Montego Bay, it's quite westernised and tourist. But out in the country areas, the people were fabulous. The children were incredible. You know, there's a real respect for everybody in those areas. And when you did a talk or you put on a campaign, everyone used to turn up because there was no televisions, no electricity, no running water, no bathroom. So it was that real sort of outdoor life where people actually came along to listen because they were interested. And it was just a wonderful period of preaching. When we last went back, I think it was in 2002, unfortunately, westernisation had started to creep in.
Mm.
And all those country areas that didn't have electricity and didn't have televisions, they all started to get them. And you can see then how it had a massive effect on preaching the truth, especially in this country, how westernisation has taken away people's...
it's the community thing, yeah, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And a lot about television.
Yeah.
Bizarrely, you know, we have a television, but it's having something to do in your own house in the evening. Mm. So therefore you don't go out and do anything out of the house.
Yeah.
Whereas before that, they'd all be at the church, wouldn't they? So that you could really be preaching in the community. And obviously some of them would then be genuinely interested and some wouldn't, but everybody would come to see.
Yeah.
Whereas once that electricity arrived, and then it was all the Jerry Springer show, wasn't it? That's what they're all into. All the doors would still be open because it's hot, you know, it's not like here. But as you walked up, no one was out sitting on their doorsteps, and then would just, you know, oh, do you want to come up? They'd all be in there watching the screen. And you could just imagine how that had happened here, like 50, 60 years ago.
Because it's fascinating, because obviously we, like, I include you in this as well. You're not that much older than me.
No, that's right.
Well said.
Still a bit older, but not that much. We don't see that, and you've had that sort of privilege almost of seeing that actually happen, so that you can see how much of an effect those sort of things have.
Yeah, people become very isolated. You know, there was Sister Janetta, wasn't there, who, you know, you knew more than me, but she was very disabled. Didn't really have mobility, did she? So she'd be stuck in her little house. But when the whole community was around, she actually wasn't that isolated. Once the whole community pulls into their houses, then suddenly she is isolated, and big impact.
I think the ecclesia that we're at, which is Roundhill in South Jamaica, it was almost the heart of the community. All the kids came there after school to come and listen to stories and play games. We had classes there to teach them English and maths, and it was just like being in the centre of the community. And it's a shame that our ecclesias aren't that nowadays, really.
Mm. In terms of numbers, maybe, what would you say? Like you said, there's a lot of people coming along. Were there many of those that became baptised? Or
I think probably... in Roundhill we got up to about 30, maybe 20 or 30. Lots of young children, though, that when we left, we later found out that they'd become baptized, but a lot of them moved to America and Canada,
and a lot of them are still in the ecclesias in America and Canada, so you sometimes see their names. But that was very much again with the awareness of the outside world that you get from television, not just Christadelphians, was it, for the whole of the Caribbean. As people grow up, they then emigrate to
and that's a problem with places like Jamaica, is that people move out, so you get these ecclesias set up and then the main people move out, and it's very difficult then to have this base of people, a permanent base. So
but I guess the ecclesias in America and Canada have benefited
definitely
from some of that. So
Would you, thinking back, do you have any sort of interesting story or anecdote that you have from your time?
I think the interesting story, if that's what you want to call it, I think because of the experience we had there, and it was an ideal place to preach for young people, we set up a missionary training program for young people, and we took two groups out of about 20 people from the UK, young people from the UK, and we ran a 4-week missionary training program, which included a week of study, getting to know each other, spending time with God. And then for the last 3 weeks, we then ran campaigns in ecclesias across Jamaica. We did that twice, and it was great because we had a few young people from America join us as well. And it was about the time then when the Caribbean went over then to the CBMA, so it's quite good for them that it made that link.
Yeah, that was good, wasn't it? It was, looking back, I mean, there weren't really risk assessments and things, were there? Quite how we managed to do that. Well, you did, really. I was sort of on the back end of it. Because a lot of the young people who went were in just 18, and we just took them out to the Caribbean for 4 weeks, transported them and put them up in various different places.
Yeah. But there's nothing like getting the experience when you're young, because a lot of those people that went on those have now gone on to do other missionary work, and you know they're sort of like the pillars now of their ecclesias, and it's amazing if we can get people involved when they're younger, what an effect that can have when they're older, I think.
Yeah. A lot of people still talk about it, don't they? Yeah. But it was, because it was a whole month, it was quite a long time. And the first week, it was study, wasn't it? But it was also about meditation. So every day we had to have an hour with God. And that was just sort of prayer and meditation. And that's the kind of discipline that's really difficult to find time for over here. But the focus was... So you were organising it, weren't you? And then there were some long-term resident missionaries who'd been in Jamaica for quite a while, who were originally from the UK. And they were very keen on, you know, the idea that you're preparing yourself to do this work. It's not kind of just turning up and doing the children's activities. It's sort of more than that. So that first week was good, wasn't it? And then there was a middle weekend, wasn't there, where we got together and everyone came back together. And then in between that, people were in small groups, like teams, going around different ecclesias, doing, I don't know, evening talks. A lot of people, a lot of the brothers, it was the first time they'd done talks. That.
Yeah.
And then children's holiday clubs all day, and going out doing pastoral visits, and all sorts of different things, wasn't it? But there's always a food story, isn't there?
Always.
Yeah, so in our group, we weren't very adventurous with food, really. But it's always very difficult when brothers and sisters have cooked food for you. You know, you feel very bad if you can't eat it. But we really couldn't eat. It was actually the Jamaican national dish, wasn't it? Which is called ackee and saltfish. So saltfish is what it sounds like, fish. Very salty fish with eyes, that kind of thing. And then the ackee is it a fruit or a vegetable? It grows on a tree, I think.
Yeah, I don't really know what you class it as.
On all the other Caribbean islands, it's classed as poisonous. But in Jamaica, they do something and then you can eat it, and it's like their national dish. But none of us found we could eat much of it, could we?
No.
And so I think there were six of us in the team, we were all sitting around. No one was really doing well with this. So there was this kitten.
Okay.
So we kept feeding the kitten all this food. In the end, the kitten couldn't take any more. It crawled off somewhere. And we had to borrow someone's hat, didn't we?
Yeah.
The one brother who was in the team had got a kind of Crocodile Dundee style hat.
Nice.
So basically all the ackee and saltfish went in the hat, and we had to sort of carry it out as we said thank you very much. And,
but we were very grateful.
Yeah, yeah.
Very grateful to the sister who put in the hard work. And
it's just one of those things, isn't it? When you're in a different country and it's not what you're used to, it isn't always the easiest. But I think the lesson is that I am not a person who finds eating food that easy, you know, unusual food.
But it's still worth doing it.
Yeah, you do cope, and there's always rice.
Yeah, you adapt to your circumstances, and it's amazing what you can put up with when you have to.
I remember similar things when I went to Nigeria. Yeah. You'd sort of, oh, the rice, I can have the rice. That bit's fine.
My first trip I did to Gambia was probably the most eye-opening from that point of view. So the Caribbean is obviously basically in many ways very lovely. West Africa is, as you say, slightly different. And I think one of the first meals they presented us with was, it was kind of sliced monkey's invertebrates and then in a stew.
Wow.
But you could kind of see the shape of the backbone. And that, I did well on rice. Yeah. I was really good on the rice.
But don't let that put you off.
Those are the kind of things that you can talk about afterwards. Yeah. But actually, you survive them, and it's all part of it.
It's not the worst thing they've heard on this podcast. I think Noah scared them quite a lot last time. So how does it compare? You say you've been to places like Belarus, Czech Republic, Russia recently. How does that compare say, to those other places. For example, there were a number of people who were perhaps a bit more apprehensive about going further afield to Africa or to the Caribbean, but there are still a lot of work to be done, a lot of visits that take place in Europe. So tell us a bit more about...
We've loved going. I mean, we sort of got a bit involved with Russia, didn't we? So we went to... we did a preaching trip in Russia where we travelled around...
Yeah, before we had the children.
...different villages and towns in Russia.
There was a really interesting little village, wasn't there, called Chakhlovka, which quite a few other people involved in Russian work would have been to.
Very good pronunciation, by the way.
Oh,
I don't know if it was right.
No, but... not right, but it sounded good. So you kind of went off the beaten track.
Yeah.
There wasn't really an obvious way to get to it.
Okay.
So you say it's different to Africa. This bit of Russia was just as isolated, wasn't it? You kind of had to just flag a car down, I think, to get us the last bit or something.
It was one of those places that if something had happened or you'd lost your passport, you'd thought, am I ever going to get out of this place? Yeah. It's like so...
It was different and it was snowy, wasn't it? So you're wading through the snow to get there. And based in a lot of Russian villages that are that far out, there's very few men, aren't there? A lot of the men have had to go elsewhere for work, or they haven't been able to find work, and there's, you know, really big problems with alcoholism, which is really sad. So effectively, in this little village, which didn't even really use money, did it, within the village, they just bartered and swapped for chickens and this kind of thing. There's just sisters, isn't there? Mm. Sisters and children. And when you get there, there's like this whole little faithful ecclesia just surviving in the middle of nowhere. You know, you think of all the resources we have all around us, all the communication, and they're just there. But, you know, they've taken their different roles and they run the meeting and they teach the children. And they have these fires, don't they, that are like in the middle of the houses. And then all the beds are built up around the chimney because that's the only warm place to sleep.
Wow.
And then there was like a kind of sauna, wasn't there? Mm. Something that you could go in. But, you know, everywhere's surrounded by snow and chickens and...
I mean,
so even that was actually quite interesting. It wasn't sort of particularly...
Everywhere we go, there's, you know, there's good stories. And it, you know, even in sort of some of the, like in Moscow and Kazan, some of the bigger cities, you know, you always hear stories of people that have travelled miles, you know, they've been in isolation. And it's what I find remarkable about this is that the truth is able to exist, you know, even... somebody just in isolation, you know, the truth is able to hold people and bring them together, and it will always find those people, and God can find the people he wants to find. And you know, some of the Russian Bible schools have been brilliant, haven't they, when you have all these people coming from, you know, Russia's huge, and you get people traveling all the way across Russia just to come to this one place just to see the word of God. Amazing, really. A bit like Prague, I suppose, where people from all over Europe
didn't
come into Prague, and that was a lovely Bible school as well. So, you know, but you know, whether you're in Africa or in Europe, you know, there's still remarkable stories.
I think I'm not sure if this is really on this question, but I'm going to go
with it
anyway.
Carry on.
One of the things I was thinking about when we think about this is that, you know, we think of going to do missionary work, but almost always when you get there, there are the people who are living there, and actually it's just their lives. And I was thinking about Jamaica. So my dad actually did mission work in Jamaica, probably 35 years before you were there or something, didn't he? But some of the same people were there. So when we were there, Ray Arthurs and Walter Draper were very elderly. When my dad was there, they were like the mainstay of the ecclesia.
Mm.
So we're dipping in and out of their lives as CVM workers, but actually they live there. And their faith stays there, and they hold their faith regardless to some extent of what we're doing. And it's lovely when we add things, but in all, you know, in Russia we can't go there now, can we? You know, it's all cut off. But then they will still be holding on to their faith, because that's what they were doing for most of the year anyway, is holding on to it. The only person in their town, you know, the only person they have contact with, but they are still you know, kind of holding on to it. And yeah, just a different perspective, perhaps.
Okay. So we have a segment, as it were, of the interview called the a soap box. So a chance for you to sort of stand up and sort of say, you don't actually have to stand up, obviously, you can carry seances and
down. Yeah, not that elderly.
But just like a message that you'd have to the people listening.
I think I've always been really passionate about young people and getting them engaged with the truth, because I found that when I was young that, you know, that sometimes you just need somebody to encourage you and to get you involved. And I think I started, and I guess you started, Abby, as well, by going to campaigns in the UK and learning about how to preach and getting involved in preaching. And then we were able then to move on to do preaching abroad as well. And, you know, being young is the best time you'll ever get. You'll have the time, you'll have the resources, and you'll have the enthusiasm and also a bit of courage as well. To get involved in these things, and if you leave it too long, you sometimes miss out on those opportunities. And I think, you know, if you are a student, if you've just finished university, take that opportunity to grasp those opportunities that are out there, to get involved in preaching. Because once you get a job, you get married, you get a mortgage, you get children, you just don't get those opportunities until then. You're probably middle-aged and you've just missed out on so much. So that would be my thing. I don't know about yours.
Yeah, no, I think, and I think it's about doing it where you are, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's great if you can get on a CBM trip, but if you can't, there are still campaigns in the UK. You know, there's all the work with the Iranians.
Yeah.
Which is effectively, really, it's like CBM's come home, it's just reversed, you know. But like I was saying, when you go on a mission trip, the people you meet are living there, so they're living it every day. And actually we can sort of all do that. And I guess, you know, I started off because Mike was prepared to take young people. You know, you did a lot of work taking people out to Jamaica with mission training programs. You know, it is important, isn't it, to keep that going for people to get the experience. But I guess it doesn't always have to be abroad. You know, COVID has limited some of what we can do from that point of view. Wars at the moment are making some of that travel more difficult, aren't they?
Yeah.
But there is still work that you can be doing here, and you can get the same excitement, the same... you know, when you're on a campaign and you're all sat around and you kind of look around the room and think, oh, it's a bit weird that God chose all of us to do this, but that's the way it is. That's kind of the same vibe as you can get on a mission trip.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this year, the campaigns for Eternal last week or the week before, I think there's 5 campaigns this year. They're all crying out for people to help. And, you know, and if you could get a group of young people to go as friends together, or not even friends, you know, young people you don't know, but... they're amazing things, and I think it's really good as a starting point just to, you know, put your toe in the water and give it a go. And they're remarkable things to do, and it will lead on to other things if that's what you're interested in, and going abroad and doing preaching. But I think some people try and run before they can walk sometimes. Yeah. And you know, it's all about the people, not about the thrill of doing it yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, obviously the last few years have been very challenging for CBM and campaigns with all of COVID and everything. So what sort of things are you up to these days, and how do you think it's been sort of shaped or affected by your earlier preaching work, CBM work?
So we've had a few opportunities to do stuff online. So I did the Russian Bible School online a couple of years ago, which was good because the actual visit got cancelled. Then we got invited to go to Prague again, which was nice. But I guess the majority of our work at the moment has been with the Iranians, hasn't it, in our ecclesias. And I think I've benefited from that in the fact that a lot of the stuff I did when I was younger, all those talks on first principles, character studies, all those things that I used to do in Jamaica or elsewhere have really come in useful now in order to do that with the Iranians. And I think, you know, I think there's still a lot of work that can be done. Yeah.
And part of that is having worked with translators, isn't
it? Yeah, that's a skill that is difficult to pick up sometimes, isn't it?
And I think it's, you know, I know lots of ecclesias have found it quite challenging to have that. It's not something we're used to in the UK. For the majority of the mission visits you do, certainly with CBM, now that the Caribbean is, you know, under America, they're almost all going to involve a translator. And the idea of having translated services and having to concentrate through the translation and, you know, things taking slightly longer, or you've got to slightly reduce what you're going to cover in each session, you know, that's really normal.
Mm.
Almost anywhere apart from the UK. But inevitably, it's a massive change in the UK. And so having had some of those experiences probably quite helpful. And also the whole thing about cultural difference. You know, how the truth looks, how the gospel is, on one level never changes. But obviously, if you take a Jamaican ecclesia, where you've probably got chickens and all sorts of things going on, and then you've got a Gambian ecclesia where you're perhaps outside because there's not a hall, and you know, that's a completely different feel and different vibe, and it looks different, and the singing in both those places would be completely different. And then you take Russia, again, very, very different. You see how some elements of the way we worship are culturally based, and then some aren't.
Yeah.
And now we've got a whole other culture coming to join us here, and being able to unpick a little bit, okay, so which bits do we need to absolutely maintain and which bits are actually cultural?
Mm.
That's quite challenging. And I guess having had other experiences perhaps makes it,
It widens your perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On the truth and the life of a disciple, rather than just having one perspective of what ecclesial life is, it enables you to see lots of different aspects of ecclesial life and how you apply things in different circumstances. And that's I think that's a real, real benefit.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose apart from that, we've just done all the normal stuff, you know. We both work, we've been parents, still are parents. So
trying to be parents.
Yeah. You know, like, whatever you can do when you are younger, especially, the more you can study, the more you can teach, the more you can get to know people and how people function and what needs they have, then I hope that has probably changed the way we've things we've done, maybe decisions we've made, what jobs we might have taken. All of those things get impacted by anything you've done with God, don't they? So,
Well, thank you both for sharing your experiences. Perhaps just end, I hope I don't put you too much on the spot here, but maybe think of, you both would have met lots of people throughout your time in all these different countries, all these different visits. Perhaps just one person that you can sort of think of as like a really, a particular example of faith and how they've managed to hold on to their faith, like you say, and often such isolation that we're just not used to over here. Perhaps is there anyone that comes to mind?
Who are you going to choose?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go first?
Go on, you go first.
So like you say, there are loads of different people. I think I'm going to go with Walter Draper.
I knew you were going to choose. I was going to go with Walter Draper.
Oh, okay.
But you go, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, so I grew up hearing a bit about Jamaica and Jamaican preaching from my dad. Yeah. And so I'd heard about Walter Draper, and then I met Walter Draper when we went, and he must have been probably in his 80s, was he then, or 90s?
Yeah.
Really quiet guy, just the loveliest brother. Just spent his entire life in little ecclesia in Jamaica.
Yeah.
Through all the ups and downs, you know, they've had all sorts of things happen in Jamaica. I mean, it's a volatile sort of country. Yeah. And to me, the fact that he was still there all those years later, just quietly, I mean, living his faith.
Yeah, let's put this into context. This wasn't just any ecclesia. This was an ecclesia in Kingston.
Yeah.
And Kingston is a, you know, it's a rough place to be, and yet, you know, this brother, a white brother, and he just completely dedicated to the truth, and every day went into downtown Kingston in order to open up the meeting room. He'd hold Bible classes there. He would do all the talks, and he was just a lovely, lovely brother. He went through some really difficult times, but you know, for him now, you know, his next waking moment will be in the kingdom, and it's lovely to think of that, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we're having the same one.
No, sorry. That's fine. Well, yeah, and thank you very much. Hopefully, this has inspired some people to at least get involved, like you say, even if it's
Your own Akita with the Iranians campaigning. Yeah. And then eventually you might get an aeroplane trip, you never know.
To sunny Barbados.
Do everything, though, to the glory of God, and God will open doors for you, definitely.
Thanks so much to Roger and Abby for that interview. It's clear that you've learnt a lot and had a lot of fun in the various adventures you've had. It's really encouraging to hear about. Thanks to Sam as well for doing that interview. So before we go, we've just got a bit of information about the floods and devastation that's been caused by Storm Freddy in Malawi and in Mozambique. The storm's been described as one of the most powerful tropical storms on record, and it's been really, really devastating there. We've got more information and updates on that on our Instagram account, which is at christadelphian.bible.mission, and on Facebook. But the situation that our brothers and sisters are facing there is incredibly challenging, and we are really praying for God's blessing and care to be on them at the moment, for his angels to encamp around them until our Lord's return. Please contact us on our CBM Instagram account if there's anything you'd like to hear about in later episodes, or for feedback on this one. And as usual, thank you so much for listening. God bless.